Well, listen, we interviewed both candidates, and we were seeking commitments from both candidates, and we couldn't get solid commitments on our core issues, like the PRO Act, like vetoing national right to work, like staying out of labor disputes and not trying to force any contracts on us, like what happened to our brothers and sisters in the rail industry. We didn't get solid commitments from either candidate, which was a major factor in our decision as a general executive board not to endorse any.
So, a little bit of trouble there for Democrats because they did not get, you know, like the biggest union to back them, despite saying that all the unions love them. All the unions love them and they, all the unions are going to back them and et cetera, et cetera. That was big because that statement that, and everybody's been talking about it today, it's like the first time since I was in high school. That, think about that, that's a big deal, that they decided to not back someone who, a Democrat, really. And you heard them, you know, lay out the reasons as to why. Just pretty amazing that this is, you know, it's kind of amazing that this is blowing up in their faces after they were trying to act like it was the Republicans that were the scourge of the working man. And how is that going to affect the surveys as we go into the election now? Because, you know, like we've been saying, everything's going to be decided in the margins and it's super close. Welcome to the show, Dana Loesch with you. We're at the top of this first hour on this Thursday. That's pretty a big deal. Now, here's the breakdown of this. And this is what I was really fascinated by, because this is kind of, I think, typically how it is. So this, it's the Teamsters Union. I mean, it's huge. And they posted, they had their own presidential endorsement poll, right? And they posted that online. And I'm looking at the tweet that they had for this, that said that they posted this yesterday. It said that in their survey, they pledged to conduct the most inclusive, democratic, and transparent presidential endorsement process in the history of their 121-year-old organization, blah, blah, blah. And they said that they've not yet endorsed anybody, and then that's when they announced yesterday they weren't going to endorse anyone. But what is amazing in this is when you look at it, it was like 3-1 that the members actually supported Trump over Harris, Republican over Democrat in this. And I think it's interesting because their president, Sean O'Brien, was the guy that we just played coming into this first hour. He was the one that you heard talking, and he's saying, oh, our members are the union and their voices and opinions at the forefront of everything that they do. So 3-1, the members actually endorse the Republican over the Democrat. And on a ton of these different issues, because they did phone polls, everything. They looked at issues. Overall, it was 44. When they looked at, when they were looking, when it was Biden, they were supporting Biden over Trump. When they switched it out to Harris, it went overwhelmingly to Trump. So when it was Biden, it was 44-36 Biden over Trump. When Harris got put in, it's 60-34, 2-1 rather, 60-34. That's pretty crazy. And only 6% were undecided. That's kind of a big deal. But when Sean O'Brien, you heard him as we were coming into this hour, he's saying, oh, well, you know, the voices and the opinions of our members are at the forefront of everything that they do. But yet you didn't endorse. I mean, that they have to. Their non-endorsement is everything. That tells you everything. But they didn't endorse because the leadership, they broke. They got wimpy over it. They did. They turned into wimps. If they were really like balls out, they'd be backing who their members back. I don't think that's a mean thing to say, because it's wimpy what they just did. I think so. I mean, Kane, that's a pretty big. High school.
Yeah, and I really think, because I know we have AOC on this, mm-hmm. because she was out there just bashing him, saying, whenever he, you know, they needed stuff, he yeah. came to Democrats. He
oh, yeah.
came to
Audio Soundbite 34. Listen to this is what Kane's talking about. Listen to this.
I'm very disappointed in Sean O'Brien's leadership. I have found it increasingly alarming all year. When the Teamsters are in trouble, who do they call? When we need to make sure that Teamsters' pensions are bailed out, when we need to make sure that they have a fair shake at the negotiating table with rail, it was Sean O'Brien calling Democrats for help.
Well, you know, it's the slogan is, what have you done for me lately? Doesn't look like Democrats have done a whole hell of a lot for the union folks lately. I mean, think about it. Really, they haven't. She's disappointed in his leadership. Oh, I guess Sean O'Brien's going to go cry himself to sleep because AOC is disappointed in his leadership. I'm fascinated by this. So it looks like, Sean O'Brien was the speaker at the RNC when Democrats had, let me pull this up. This is Axios. When Democrats had their convention, they didn't invite him to speak. Or they requested to speak and they were snubbed. In fact, Kara Dennis, their spokesperson for the Teamsters, told Axios, quote, "We didn't get a response to our request for him to speak." Now, they had rank and file Teamsters retirees that were invited. That kind of signals that. I think that was just kind of a gimme. To me, it seems like they were trying to signal that it was personal, their snub to O'Brien. But you got to remember, look at where the membership was. Look at what I just told you what their whole, it was, you know, like 60% to 34 in favor of Trump over Harris. That's significant. That's incredibly significant. You're not snubbing at that point the guy who is the head of the Teamsters. You're snubbing the Teamsters because them not endorsing actually is ignoring their membership. So they snubbed him, and the Democrats did not have him at their convention. And then when Axios reached out to Democrats to get them to respond, DNC didn't have any response to Axios, which was interesting as well. They said that because historically they've done it. I mean, they have 13 million members in the Teamsters, so that's significant. He's not making his union mad. I hope Democrats realize this. He's not making the rank and file angry. They're all not voting for her. I mean, going by the survey, they're not voting for her. So would it have changed that much had he endorsed Trump, do you think? That's the big question. Do you think it would have?
I think he would have effectively killed any cooperation that he would have gotten from Democrats in any future negotiations in regards to the union. And I think he was protecting himself.
That's true. I mean, I simultaneously dislike union bosses, and then I also understand that it is not an easy place for them right now. I don't dislike private sector. Public sector is what angers me, because I, as a taxpayer, am denied a seat at the table where everyone else gets to argue with the money I work my ass off to earn and that you work your ass off to earn. And we're all at the table, but we're told to get up and leave it when it comes to public unions. And that's un-American. I don't do that. You don't treat us like that. You don't take our money, tell us to shut up and get out of the room, and then negotiate with our money. Oh, hell no. Private sector, you guys do what you want. Public sector, that's when I got a problem, because I'm not at the table and it's my money. But this, I mean, he's not in an easy spot, as Kane just said, because they, you know, for negotiations, you got to negotiate. And he's, I think, hedging his bets, because it is now, before we get mad at him, I cannot even believe. Will you mark this down? I'm sort of defending him right now. This is wild. A whole new world. I can't exactly blame him for hedging his bets when he's looking at his union membership, because look at the polls. Everything is really close. And I've got some other stuff for you as well. The enthusiasm, for some reason, are they all like, what are they doing? Are they all like hitting the booger sugar that Hunter has? Like, what is up with the Democrat enthusiasm now starting to increase? I don't get it. Well, I saw a couple surveys. I think it's only because they're getting hyped up over nothing. It's going to fade. It's like a sugar rush, you know, like they get them hyped up over something and then it starts to fade as they go towards the election. That's what I tend to think this is. But anyway, it's close considering. It's close. Be wary of anyone who tells you that one person is way ahead of the other. Be wary of any survey that tells you that. So he's kind of hedging his bets and he's trying to figure out, okay, what's the best thing for me to do here? Because, you know, what if I, and as Kane points out, I mean, O'Brien's speech at the RNC was a little lefty. And I get what the RNC was trying to do. Although I got to tell you, I was more shocked by the stuff that he said on the DNC stage than I was over Amber, what's her face, the slut walk lady. I like way more so than that, because I'm like, that's just, you know, whatever. This is actual policy. So I'm a little concerned here. It's Democrats. What are they going to do? I mean, that's a great thing for Republican operatives to exploit. You've got Democrats who are trying to put a wedge between the leadership and the members, and they're trying to disregard the members by reducing them all down to just Sean O'Brien's voice. You know, this whole idea, who was it, Neil Simon that wrote Waiting for Lefty? That sentiment is dead in the Democrat Party right now. Interesting. I mean, I'm just curious. What are Democrats going to do now? Are they going to blow it? Are they going to blow it with unions? And then what does that mean for blue collar vote? Because blue collars, they don't want to be paying $4 or $5 a gallon for gas. They don't want to have dudes in their daughter's locker rooms. They don't want to struggle to keep the roof over their head. They don't like watching the news and hearing stories about people who enter the country at the southern border illegally being put up in 5-star hotels. And then other people who are brought in under the temporary protection status program illegally, sheltered in these Midwestern towns and then completely taking them over. They don't like that stuff. You're not going to be able to convince them to accept those policies. And furthermore, here's the big thing, that this is a huge cultural thing that we're sort of missing. And I remember thinking about this when I was watching the Grand Tour. They were in the United States, and actually Clarkson and May and Hammond, I love that show, and they just had their last episode that Amazon came out with earlier this week. And they were in Detroit, and it was James May who noted, they put a garden here where this automobile factory used to be. And it was like part of what was the Ford factory, and it had been taken down, and they had this community garden there. And Jeremy Clarkson goes up and says, this is garbage. This is a stupid garden. He wanted to run over it and do wheelies in it. He said, this is so dumb because this used to be like the manufacturing center of the world. And he said, Detroit was the envy of the world. And now look what it is. It's like a hippie's garden. And he's like, this is what's happening. It was great insight on the deindustrialization of the United States and the Rust Belt and what we are currently going through and what blue collar is going through. And now with the emergence of AI, you have an entire swath of voters who are on very shaky ground. And they're nervous because they used to be supremely influential in elections. And now, what is their influence? They still have influence because they have numbers. It's a weird time. And it seems like only certain Republicans get this. Democrats haven't caught on to this yet. That sentiment, I feel, is going to play huge going into who's voting for whom in November. We've got a lot more. I like having options, diverse options, when it comes to defensive accoutrements. And the burn a gun is one of those things, because not everyone has the luxury of being able to take their firearm with them everywhere. I got very good friends of mine who live and work in the press in D.C., and, you know, they think like you. Believe it, they do. But even if they have their license to carry in D.C., which is hard to get, and they have their firearm, which is hard to get out there, then they can't carry in like 90% of the places. So what are they going to do? You've seen the crime, right? I have friends out there and friends in New York that went and got, the model they got was the Byrna SD. Byrna makes several different kinds. Now you're probably like, okay, well, what is it? Well, it's better than a stun gun. A stun gun's only got like a couple of shots. The Byrna SD can stop threats from up to 50 feet away with chemical irritant projectiles. So it's a deterrent that can serve to help you in any kind of in a defensive situation. And you don't have a background check to go through. It's illegal in all 50 states. There's no permit. I mean, they can ship it right to your door. So it's super accessible. It doesn't care about your gun-free zone signs. It really doesn't. And this is why I say it's good to have multiple options for self-defense, particularly when you're limited in the usage of some of those. To learn more about the Byrna gun, visit Byrna.com/Dana for 10% off your purchase. That's B-Y-R-N-A, Byrna.com/Dana. Check out the different models, accessories, and more. Byrna.com/Dana for 10% off.
Have you ever noticed it's only called a recession after we're already in it or past it? Economists are always in search of a recession, like Leonard Nimoy. If they find one, it's already too late. Always be prepared by putting money away and investing accordingly. Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So apparently when you stare... Okay, this is a study that says if you look into your dog's eyes, something really cool happens. Apparently, it's called interbrain coupling, and it's a bond between humans and their canine companions. And it was published in the journal Advanced Science. They used a cutting-edge technique called dual EEG to measure the activity of both humans and dogs as they engage in bonding behaviors like petting and looking at each other. Looking at each other is a bonding thing. It's hysterical. But they said that when they would look at each other, that the dog brains and the people brains actually fell into sync, a coordinated pattern of activity, and it had a leader-follower dynamic, like the humans, the pack leader, and the dog. It's very interesting. I totally believe this. I completely, totally believe this. Michelle Obama plugs a healthy new drink at Costco. I don't want to say the name of it because I feel like I'm advertising it. It's supposed to be calorie-free, which means it's going to taste horrible. It's Plezzy Fizz. That's what it's called. Plezzy Fizz.
I thought it was going to be Big Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Big Mike's Hard Lemonade. Yeah, I mean, that would have been better. I would have... Plezzy Fizz sounds like a... It does. It does. And you know I'm right. It is. It sounds like a... I can't say that out loud, but... So you know I'm right. Let's see. Oh, it's today's episode of It's Not the Vax, guys. Deep links between alcohol and cancer described in a new report. Alcohol and cancer. I don't believe it. It's the American blah, blah, blah. Adults under 50. Colon cancer. Colon cancer.
We would have seen it way before.
Yeah, we would have seen it way before. Way, way before. We've got a lot more on the way. Stick with us. The P15. This is a great company, and this is a great firearm. If you are unfamiliar with the P15, you need not be. It is the smallest, thinnest, double stack 9mm that you can get on the market. And with the P15, it comes in two versions. It's the metal version and the polymer version. And the metal versions, I mean, I like both of them. And I think they're both great for different things too. The metal version has that gorgeous walnut wood frame with the textured grip. It makes it a nice looking gun. Comes with two magazines, both of them do. Standard 15 round with minimal pinky extension. You have a flush fit double stack mag that holds 12 rounds as well. Tritium and fiber optic front sight. And you got a fully adjustable fiber optic 2-dot rear. And lifetime warranty, striker fire reliability, great smooth trigger pull. It is just ideal, and it's from the inventors of the micro compact pistol category. So it's a great concealed carry gun. It's the lightest one, not lightest 9mm I have. You don't lose any stopping power at all, and you get ultimate concealability. It's innovation, performance, and Kel-Tec. Learn more at KelTecWeapons.com, K-E-L-T-E-C Weapons.com. It's the P15. Tell them Dana sent you.
Not able to catch the full Dana Show? Follow Dana's Absurd Truth podcast and get news and laughs delivered in short, easy-to-digest episodes. Ideal for your busy lifestyle on Apple or wherever you get your podcast.
We need to take that on. We need to lower the cost of housing. We don't have enough housing in our country. The supply is too low, and it's too expensive, both for renters and for folks who want to buy a home. So we will build together millions of new homes and give first-time home buyers $25,000 in down payment assistance.
I like how they promised to build all of these houses when they couldn't even build the EV stations. Remember, they were really trying that. They were really trying to do that, and it didn't happen. How many did they say they were going to build, like a million or something like that?
500,000.
500,000. It's like seven,
five or six.
Yeah, something just ridiculous. So yeah, it's she hasn't really done a whole hell of a lot. I mean, I would think that houses, you know, that's a lot more goes into building those than, you know, just the EV charging stations, right, Kane?
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm not like I'm not a construction worker or a contractor, but just feel like that's probably a lot different.
Oh, yeah, it's a lot different. Plus, the logic here is she should really be working on bringing prices down, not taking our money to close the gap between the overinflated prices and where everyone is in their income today. She's losing it.
I mean, it's just why we're going to talk to Carol Roth about all of this coming up, especially after the Fed cut, 50 basis points yesterday.
It's a Band-Aid.
It's, yeah, it's like a cheap Band-Aid, the ones that don't stick so good.
A bee sting Band-Aid.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Oh, welcome back. Dana Lash, the bottom of this first hour. Hey, she had a new accent, Kane. Audio soundbite 4, Kamala had a new accent that she debuted while speaking to the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Listen to how fluent she sounds.
I love you back.
I love you back. Good God.
Why? Why do people do that?
I've heard the explanation. It's called code switching. Yeah. And apparently, whenever you're in front of a crowd of a certain ethnicity, you tend to take on the vernacular and the speaking techniques of what the majority of the crowd speaks like. So it's called code switching. Like they're excusing this.
As a way to empathize or
yeah, they're trying to say it's for empathy. But in reality, this is all a bunch of BS and she's only doing it to pander. But they're giving it an excuse.
Yeah, it sounds like it. That's who boy. Yeah, I love you too.
Imagine if Trump changed his accent in front of
the crowd. He ate a taco salad.
Right.
And they got mad at him. You guys, this is like probably one of my favorite, most outrages of the left. He ate legit, remember this? You guys remember this? What was this, Cinco de Mayo?
Yeah, it was
and
actually.
And he legit ate a taco salad that he got from his restaurant. He was in his restaurant. He was sitting at his desk. This was before he was elected in 2016. Had a taco salad. And he had it at his desk. And he's like, oh, happy Cinco de Mayo. He's like, I love Hispanic culture. And everyone said, you're pandering. Because he's eating a taco salad, you know.
So the right...
The favorite food of the Irish.
The right cannot celebrate culture because then... The left just calls it racism, but the left can totally do what Kamala does and what Hillary does and what they all do in front of
different crowds. That you like Hispanic food is not appropriation. That's celebration of a culture. Pretending that you have a Spanish accent a la Hillary Baldwin or whatever her name is, right, and pretending that you're Spanish, that's appropriation. And doing what Kamala did, that sounds like appropriation.
I got hot sauce in my purse, right, Hillary?
Yeah, like, exactly.
That's pandering.
And it's so cringe. Like, how do they go in front of a big group of people and not be embarrassed that they're doing this? Like, oh, these people know that I'm not. I mean, they look at her and they are like, okay, you're not Hispanic. Why did you just cop a Hispanic accent with us? Yeah. Like, they look at Hillary Clinton. You're not black. Why are you all of a sudden trying to cop, like, the Southern Baptist preacher speaking technique with maybe a little bit of Jesse Jackson flair? What's up? Why are you doing that? You know what I mean? Like, they don't. The normal people like us would embarrass ourselves to death.
And more than one occasion, they'll go as far as playing Despacito while they're sitting at the lectern. It's unbelievable.
Joe Biden, did they all remember?
It's unbelievable.
Well, he tried to play it off his phone and then he couldn't figure it out and an aide had to go up. And then he had to be like, yeah, I have Despacito on my phone.
And then si se puede.
I mean, it's one thing to get the accent correctly when you're saying a word. Like Joe Biden doesn't. It's another thing to do. Like, Kamala Harris went full on Hillary Baldwin. Or how do you say your name? She changed her name. She's like this white chick from Boston.
Right.
And then she's like, no, I am Hispanic. How you say cucumber? She did her cooking show. How you say cucumber? It's like, but you're from Boston. You know how to say cucumber? Grief. Can I talk real quick about this? I just got to switch it up because we're politics heavy today. But I got to hit on a couple other things too because we got to get into the Iran stuff. We got to get into the Israel stuff. I think I have this like way down on the rundown, so I'm really sorry, Juan. But I wanted to bring it up now since we're talking about culture stuff. You guys remember the ginger, the angry ginger, the royal or whatever, the British royal ginger, the balding British angry royal ginger. I could keep going. But anyway, he lives in his Olive Garden McMansion in Montecito. And his suitcase game show girlfriend, wife, sorry, yacht girl, former yacht girl, whatever. They've decided, they dropped this huge video. I only watch them because I am fascinated by how they believe in the own hype that they try to make for themselves. I've never seen anything like it in my life, except for maybe some influencers in politics. I've never seen anything like this in my life. They really think that they are the be-all, end-all. And they do all this stuff, and they trash their family, and they trash our free speech. He's the guy who came over here and complained about our First Amendment, all of this stuff. So now they came out with this big video where they said that it's very important that they said, together, let's make sure every eligible voter is informed and empowered to participate in shaping America's future. This is so stupid. It's like they gave a basic B explainer on, like, how do you vote? And they did this video and they released it. And it's supposed to, like, they're intimating, obviously, that they're voting for Kamala Harris. But they're trying to, they made a big statement. They want to stay neutral in the race. Who cares what you people want to do? This is the United States. Quit trying to establish your little quasi court here and your Olive Garden McMansion in Montecito that I think you bought from a Russian oligarch. I'm pretty sure, like a drug dealing Russian oligarch. Stop. Just stop it. And they have this foundation, this Archwell Foundation. Does anyone know what this thing actually does? I think all they do is grift off it. Their expense reports that they have to file because of their tax structure apparently shows that they spend more on salaries than they do any actual do-gooding. I just can't stand it. And they both want to play a part in politics. This dude is British. He should probably be deported because he's a Nazi cosplaying druggie. Why is he here? How did he even get here? They wanted taxpayer-funded protection and all this stuff. Why are they even here? I just can't stand these two. You don't follow them, Kane, do you? I only follow because I see stuff that comes up on Daily Mail.
Yeah, and when I'm prepping for the show. And
I have a couple of British friends, one of whom really rabidly dislikes them. Right. And I get text updates about it.
But
God
it is,
love
it's
her.
Like that that tour of I Want My Privacy tour where they're out there just protesting.
Yeah. Like, why do you have to sit here and tell people how important it is to vote? And they said that the suitcase chick was all, it's the Duchess suitcase. It's the most important election of our lifetime. Shut up. Like the most vapid, unintellectual things that you could possibly say. These two cobble them together and act like it's like this earth-shattering video. Stop it. And learn how to iron your damn clothes and hem your things properly. My gosh, unless you're a juggalo wearing Junko jeans, your stuff doesn't always need to be dragging the ground like a car wash. God help us. I said wash. I meant it. All right, I'm moving on now. I had to get that out of my system. Thank you guys for humoring me. I have a thing with that. All right, so a couple of other things. Did you guys hear this flashback video from Kamala Harris on Kane did? He's like, oh, Lort, L-O-R-T. Kamala Harris, when was this?
Oh, wow.
It was some years ago. But it shows that she has never changed her position where it concerns gun confiscation. So she has this video where she talks about the basically how she's they want to go door to door and basically take everybody's guns. That's what they had said. I was looking at it's a flashback. She had said, quote, just because you legally possess a gun in the sanctity of your home doesn't mean that we're not going to walk into that home and check to see if you're being responsible. I'm sorry, what? Listen to this.
Responsible behaviors among everybody in the community. And just because you legally possess a gun in the sanctity of your locked home doesn't mean that we're not going to walk into that home and check to see if you're being responsible and safe in the way you conduct your affairs.
Like hell. What do you mean?
What the hell do you think you are?
Now, she's speaking. This was when Gavin Newsom was still mayor. So she was the AG of California when this happened. So it was a little bit ago because then she was senator. So this is when she was attorney general of California. So it's not that long ago, but it's a little bit ago. And Gavin Newsom is still San Francisco mayor. She's saying that, well, you know, we can still walk into your house and check to see if you're being responsible. What would people who don't even know anything about firearms, what would they even know to check? I'm curious. And you in what army? Like you sit here and you demonize gun ownership. How do you think you're going to gain entry to all of these private homes with guns? Because that's kind of defeats the purpose, or rather, doesn't that underscore your agenda? I mean, it depends on which way you look at it. She's always been an extremist on this stuff. This is why when she sits here, her and Tim Fudd up there, when they get out there and say, oh, we don't want your guns. We're gun owners. Nerf doesn't count. Nerf doesn't count, Cynthia. It does not count. No one believes you. Now, Tim Fudd, I think he does own like a couple firearms and he really brags about it. Like he's the guy who maybe goes hunting like once every few years and then he brags about it all the time. Whatever. No one believes that she has changed her position on this. You do not go in the span of 6, 7 years, 8 years. You do not go from advocating forced entry into people's homes to confiscate their firearms or to inspect them to, no, we totally support the Second Amendment. Yeah, like I have guns. No one, what is the walk, the path to the 180 on that, right? Like if you, I'm all for people changing their minds on issues, but the people who've genuinely changed their mind on an issue, they have the story arc to go with it, right? Oh, well, this happened. And when this happened, it altered my thinking. And then I started thinking this and I went, she doesn't have that. And as Kane noted, Kane says that she's never said that she's a gun owner. He's never heard her say that until the past several months.
I mean, maybe she's mentioned it for a political reason in the past because, you know, AG and the DA and all that. But I have never heard it until recently. So I'm, again, the campaign does nothing but lie. They know they don't have a lot of time before the election, so this is what they're doing.
Just saying. We have more on the way as well. We're going to get into, we got immigration to get into. We've got the, well, you know, the VP debate's coming up. We're going to, Hillary says the reason she lost is because you all are sexist. And she would say racist if she could get away with it. Well, they did, actually. Wait a minute. What am I talking about? They actually did say that. I think I did a TV hit, like, in the week after, the days following the election, where people were actually arguing that it was because they didn't vote for the old white woman. Okay. We're going to get into all of that as well. I got some culture issues for you. GOP, we got China. We also have the latest with Israel, Hamas, Hezbollah. Think about this while we get ready to roll towards Days of These United States. What if the pager phone little exploding hack thing, is there a concern that that could fall into the wrong hands or bad hands, rather? Like, I'm fine with Israel doing it. I mean, go and get them terrorists, get them, blow them up. I don't care. I mean, you know, how many service members has Iran killed? How many Americans did they kill in 1983? You know, I'm like, blow them all up. But what if that tech gets, what if that does get into, like, oh, I don't know, like ISIS hands or something? I'm just asking a question. I mean, it's not wrong to ask questions. So we're going to discuss this. Our partners over at Black Rifle Coffee make the best coffee in America. They really do. Black Rifle Coffee Company. They have right now a Mission Fuel Kit variety sampler. This thing is awesome. You can get 4 ounce bags of my favorites, AK-47 Espresso, Beyond Black, Silencer Smooth, Just Black. Every flavor is amazing. And the fuel kit comes in a really cool blue box. So it's a great gift for people. Or if you just want to sample some of these other roasts without committing to like the big giant full bag, you can. Now it's available exclusively right now on ground texture, but you know, you can get the whole bean K cups ready to drink and ground in addition to that of all of these roasts at blackriflecoffee.com, where you can also sign up for the coffee club. This is what I do because we drink coffee in our house. We're coffee drinkers. You choose your roast or roasts, if there's more than one, how often you want it shipped, how often you want to have it, and they will send it to your front porch with free shipping. That's amazing. And it's, God bless America. It's just the best coffee. They roast them 5 days a week, Tennessee and Utah, and they get award-winning coffee beans and they bring it back. And everything that they do pays homage to American culture and military history. Experience outstanding flavor and aroma at blackriflecoffee.com. Order the complete Mission Fuel Kit variety sampler today. Get 20% off using code Dana. Code Dana gets you 20% off only at blackriflecoffee.com.
Get the lowdown on the latest news with a side of laughs whenever you want. Subscribe to the Dana Show podcast on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
I don't think I'm a believer, but I've interviewed pilots that look, I like Tom Cruise, but better than Tom Cruise. The blonde crew cuts, the whole, and this, yes, sir. And they were in the Oval Office, three or four pilots. These are not people that make up stories. These are, they said, all I know, sir, is there was a round object that was going four times faster than my F-22, which is a very fast plane. And it wasn't, you know, it shouldn't have been. It was round, sir. They have seen, I mean, four or five guys I've interviewed, solid people, great pilots for the U.S. Air Force, etc. They've seen things that they cannot explain.
So this is like what Mike Pompeo said when he was on the show. When he was CIA director, we had him on the show. And the first question was, sir, can you tell us about the aliens? I just like threw all like professional courtesy out the window. And I'm like, no, sir, we got to ask about the aliens. I'm sorry. And he laughed, was like, oh, well, people said they saw stuff. And anyway, next topic. I'm like, what? That's, I mean, that's the way to tell me that there are aliens. If, you know, you can't tell me that there are aliens, that's the way, that's what someone who knows that there are aliens but can't tell me about the aliens, that's what they would say, right? Yeah. I don't think we're reading too much into that, Kame. I feel like that's an accurate assessment.
Unless there is such a deep state that they have all this technology that four times faster than an F-22.
What if it's the deep state from the future?
See, now you're speaking my language.
Were you guys ready for that?
Whole roll of tinfoil back here.
I mean, what if though? Just saying. What if? Now I'm like, ooh, not weird. I don't want them to have that. Like, maybe I need to reevaluate my. See, I only want my tax dollars to go towards, I don't know, like blown up Terry's. Just saying. Like, we got to talk about that because Hezbollah, the chief Hassan Nasrallah, says this pager attack is a declaration of war. What I like it is that Israel has regained the whole. What the hell are they going to do next? Speculation. Now, Hezbollah, Hamas, Iran, they're all worried. Like, wait. What else are they going to blow up? What's next? That's a fun game. What else are they going to blow up? I like that game. Stick with us. We got more to come. Second hour next. In an era where daily election headlines and political turmoil can create a sense of unrest, having a peaceful retreat is more important than ever. Cozy Earth's exceptional products can be instrumental in helping you establish a sanctuary within your own home. Their sheet set is a standout favorite of mine. You get unmatched comfort and a nice soothing touch. You can create your own sanctuary with Cozy Earth's best-selling bamboo sheet set made from 100% premium viscose from bamboo. The softness of their sheets and the quality of their materials will truly elevate your space and turn your bedroom into a cozy haven. And if you're seeking to transform your living environment into a serene escape, Cozy Earth also offers the perfect solution to create that tranquil home that you've been longing for. With a 10-year guarantee, these sheets are a long-lasting investment in quality. So get the ultimate in comfort and up to 40% off at CozyEarth.com/Dana and use code Dana. Don't forget to tell them that I sent you in the post-purchase survey and you can get free socks. That's CozyEarth.com/Dana and use code Dana to get up to 40% off.
And in this situation, I cannot take sides. A bomb, no matter where it goes off. I think that there's also a question of the numbers of people who are killed, and it certainly is a lopsided situation there that the Palestinians really don't stand much of a chance on an equal, if they're trying to compete with a machine.
Oh my gosh, shut up. You know what? They shouldn't have attacked a country and murdered innocent women and children, babies. What this was, first off, welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you, top of the second hour. Channel 347 DirecTV. The chat's at Rumble. We're also on X. So that's Joan Baez. Don't get mad at me for the older members of my audience. I could not tell you a single song this chick is saying. All I know is that she is not one of the good hippies. She's like the commie, dirty feet and Birkenstock hippie. Isn't that correct, Kane?
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar with her? Like, who sat around at MSNBC's Morning Joe and is like, you know what we need? We need one of those dirty Marxist hippies to come over. The one who sounds like she plays the guitar with her dirty Birkenstock feet. Let's have her on the show. Let's get checks notes. Joan Baez's take on this. Really? Who else can you get from, like, the days of yore? Good night. I don't even know what song she's done. Why the hell is her thoughts on what's happening with Israel defending itself relevant right now? Well, the Palestinians can't go against a machine. Israel has every right to defend itself. the elected government of the people who live in Gaza, Hamas attacked them. Their country that they love still, Hamas, they love this representation. They were going to vote for it again. They attacked Israel. And Hamas still enjoys an over 63% approval rating in Gaza. So their government, Gazan's government, because Palestine's a fake thing, it doesn't exist. We just like we don't pretend that the phrase an assault weapon is real, or we pretend that guys who tuck and put on lipstick are chicks. We also don't pretend that made up places like Palestine exist, or that's a real ethnicity, entity, or country. It's not supported by 2,000 years of antiquity, so stop. If you want to use Hadrian's spiteful word to describe people that he thought of as enemies and rename their land after a long ago defeated enemy that was actually based in Crete, the Philistines, then you can go right ahead. But we like to actually play in science and history here. That said, who thought, like, let's have her on? What is she? Why? They have, again, every right to defend themselves against being attacked. So where was the concern then? It's always, oh, well, now we got to feel sorry for the people that are getting their butts kicked. Because they decided to try to they carried out an act of genocide against Israel. It was an act of war. Good grief. Joan Baez. What, name me a song she's done, Kane.
She's been out there since the 60s.
I don't know anything she's done.
I know that she did a lot of covers.
Oh, she did she?
Yeah, she did. That much I know.
Well, she did some covers. So she's basically a cover artist, no better than a cover artist that's like playing at a Houlihan's. Steve goes, who cares what Ja Rule thinks about 9/11? Yeah, right? It's like getting Ja Rule, what do you think about, what do you think about all this? You and Joan, let's get Joan Baez, Ja Rule. Who else can we get to fill out our trifecta of talking heads on MSNBC? Like, who is that? Just a Morning Joe thing? Isn't he he's like one of the bad boomers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. There are some good boomers because they helped raise Gen X. But we're talking, and I don't want to get hate mail from you people. We're specifically talking about the dirty Marxist hippies. So who sits around and is like, let's bring this old relic up. Let's go dust her off from the museum of DGAF.
I think he and Mika think they're Gen X.
Shut up. No, they don't.
I think they do.
Shut up. They're like 60 and 70 years old. Isn't he like 70?
Morning Joe?
Yeah, he's like older than dirt, isn't he?
I'll have to look that up.
I don't know.
He's 61.
Oh, see, I was, no offense, guys. But he's old. And he's mean. The fact that he's mean and not cool makes it worse, right? He's like, I'm going to tie the sweater around my shoulders kind of D-bag. That's that guy. And they got, every time I talk about him, because they used to obsessively watch everything I said, and they would freak out on their show every morning if I ever spoke about them. So, you know, just sign this with a kiss. So anyway.
Well, it looks like if Gen X is 1962.
Shut up. I'm not even hearing this. No, you know what? Let me tell you something, sir, gatekeeper. You act like that you're the gatekeeper for Gen X, and you're trying to shove me out so you can get this boomer in?
I'm just
Hail, H-A-I-L, no. We'll fight right now in this segment. Throw down.
I'm just
no.
looking at what the internet is saying about the dates.
Oh, now?
X.
Now, tinfoil, you're going to look at the internet?
No, I'm just saying this is what it
I'm
is.
I'm not even dealing with you right now. You're grounded.
I'm just saying.
Not even dealing with you.
It's possible they both think.
They can think it,
right.
But it doesn't mean it's real any more than the guy who's like, it's ma'am, is a woman, right? How do you do, fellow kids? So this story about the exploding everything, it gets better because they had the second wave yesterday. So first it was the pagers, you know, from the liver to the knee, as the meme says. This is so great. From the liver to the knee. So apparently, there was yet another wave where they had walkie-talkies exploding. And now the people in Hezbollah are freaking out. They're like, what else is going to blow up? Oh, my gosh. They have no idea. So the walkie-talkies exploded, all kinds of stuff. They've been so, it's been so zeroed in. It's kind of wild. The New York Times reported that the first series, the pagers were secretly packed with explosives. Now, you might be going, well, how did this happen? Remember, we talked yesterday about Israel had to have probably intercepted something, you know, or maybe they had, and I was speculating because the story hadn't even come out yet. I was speculating, well, maybe they, I don't know, they got in there and, you know, had a shell company and they were a vendor or something and they packed this stuff with explosives because one of the reports was that, and I included this in your prep if you get the newsletter over at Substack. One of the reports had said that that Hezbollah got a new vendor, like at the last minute. How dumb is that? That they got a new vendor and that they were made in Taiwan. Oh boy, it gets even better and better. So apparently, check this out. There was a Hungarian company that produced explodable pagers for Lebanon that generated a revenue of like over almost $1 million with one employee. And it was a company that was registered in Hungary in 2022. The company Back Consulting KFT is at the center of a controversy. Well, if you had Israel went literally created a company, they built a fake company to manufacture these pagers themselves. If you had that on your bingo card, well, you get to fill that space because that's exactly what they did. I am so here for this. I am so unbelievably here for this. So that's what they did. They created this fake company specifically for this purpose. It is quite wild. And so they said it's BAC Consulting. It was a Hungary-based company that was under contract to produce the devices on behalf of a Taiwanese company, Gold Apollo. But it was all an Israeli front, apparently. They said at least two other shell companies were created to mask the real identities of the people creating the pagers, Israeli intelligence officers. This, I think, was New York Times. BAC did take on ordinary clients, and it produced a range of ordinary pagers. But the only client that mattered was Hezbollah, and its pagers, produced separately, contained batteries laced with the explosive PETN, according to three intelligence officers. They began shipping to Lebanon in the summer of 22 in small numbers, and then the production ramped up after Nasrallah denounced cell phones. And some of the head of Hezbollah's fears were that, spurred by reports from allies, that Israel had acquired new means to hack into phones and activating microphones and cameras to spy on the owners. And so three intelligence officials said Israel invested millions into developing the tech. Word spread among Hezbollah that no cell phone communication, even encrypted messaging apps, were safe anymore. So they all got pagers and walkie-talkies and got blowed up. Just saying. Now, I think that that's done a couple of things. First off, there was the appearance of reputational harm in terms of how hardcore Israel could go in the wake of October 7th. And the idea of Israel setting these pagers up and doing this reclaims that. And how they rigged them up and yes, maybe Hezbollah messed up because they should not have gotten like an unvetted new vendor. But the problem is that Israel, I think, was hurt on the appearance of defense and their ability to go on offense after October 7th. And that has a value when you consider deterrence, right? You're not going to attack an opponent that is hardcore and will just murk you off this rock. There's less of a deterrent if they take that kind of hit. And so that is what I think Israel has reclaimed with us, because now Hezbollah has been knocked back and they have no idea where the next wave is going to come from. They have no idea what's going to happen next. They're just freaking out. And they keep saying, well, we're going to escalate. Israel's inching towards war. But Hezbollah has been doing this to Israel. Israel's just finally had enough and they're defending themselves. So Hezbollah doesn't want to take it one further because they have no idea where this is going to come from. They have no idea. I mean, I think that Israel reclaimed the credibility for deterrence after October 7th because they looked wounded after that. And now they can even track the data. I was reading this one piece on all the pagers, if they modified like the code used and all this stuff. And they don't even know like what other things that they've modified or what other companies they may or may not have to produce stuff. Nobody knows. It's actually kind of smart. So here's the big question. What happens if, think about how many phones we all have. I'm not at all even remotely saying that Israel will do this. I'm saying that bad actors would copy this. Is that a concern? Should it be a concern? You really got it. This is why chain of command for these, or chain of custody for this stuff, is incredibly important. Like the production of our phones, right? You got a whole bunch of new iPhones coming out there. Every couple of years, y'all got new phones, Samsung, iPhone, all kinds of stuff. Y'all got the smartwatches. Y'all got all kinds of stuff with lithium batteries in it. Although these apparently were modified to include some explosives. Still, you got to think. Could that be, what if you got, you have all these terror, what if you have terror cells in the U.S. and they just want to blow stuff up? And they could, I'm just asking a question. That's why the chain of custody for product like that is incredibly important. Supply chains are incredibly important. Interesting thing to think about. Goodness. Also, let's see. We were talking about what the Fed did. We got to get into this thing. I want to, coming up, because we got Carol Roth on to talk about the 50 basis points and the Federal Reserve and all of that. We've got to debunk, and I mentioned this in the newsletter that I sent out this morning that has all the radio prep on it. This horrible woman, or horrible story from Democrats about a woman who she passed away after she had taken abortion pills. And Democrats are trying to say, well, she passed away because she couldn't get an abortion. That's not what happened. And we're going to set that record straight coming up because they're trying to make this a big deal in these battleground states. So we have a lot to hit as we move. Brought to you by our friends over at Patriot Mobile, the only Christian conservative cell phone service in the country. And Patriot Mobile not only wants to make sure that you can afford your phone service in this Kamala economy. I had to say that slow. But that also you're not going to be taking, they're not going to be taking your hard-earned money and using it on the things that you vote against every time you're at the ballot box. You're going to save because they have plans tailored for everybody. Dinks, families of, you know what a dink is, the dual income, no kids. I just like saying it. Dinks, families of all sizes, businesses of all sizes, everybody come and get your plan at Patriot Mobile. You get free activation using code Dana. And right now you can get a free month of service as well. Look, you want to put some momentum behind the stuff that you're voting to protect this November. Patriot Mobile can help. It's one of the reasons why I'm proud to partner with them. Best service in your area. You're saving money and not funding the left. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 972-PATRIOT. Get that free month of service using offer code Dana. Don't be fooled by the others pretending to share your values or have the same coverage. Switch today. 972-PATRIOT, patriotmobile.com/Dana.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So I feel like this is how plagues start. So these, apparently these researchers, archaeologists, they found a 3,000-year-old sword that had the pharaoh's mark on it in Egypt. 3,000 years ago, a team of archaeologists, they were digging up an ancient fort, and they spotted a bronze blade in the Nile Delta, and they claimed it, and they said it had the intricacies of the ornamental cartouche, the personal emblem used by the pharaohs, still visible. It had not lost its reflective shine. And they said that they're going to put it in the museum, but good night. I just feel like, isn't that how the mummy comes back and all that stuff, like they found? Like they pulled the, I'm just saying. It's very pretty, but this is where I'd be totally creeped out as an archaeologist. Because I read all that stuff about the guy who, the family that owns the house where Downton Abbey's filmed. That's the family that did like the King Tut stuff, and they said it was the Pharaoh's curse and all this that play. It's fascinating. You should read about it. And everyone's like, thanks, Dana. Radio, our history is now terrifying. We're so happy. Let's see. This Supreme Court, we're going to talk about this coming up. An Alaska man was charged with threatening to assassinate six Supreme Court justices. Which ones? All the conservative ones. It was only the conservative justices. And he has been accused, a 76-year-old guy, has sent over 465 messages to them through the online portal, according to court filings. He's threatened to kill them, torture them, hang them, behead them, execute them, assassinate, all kinds of stuff, and encouraged other people to join him in committing acts of violence. So, and it's all, he didn't like their decisions. That's what he said. He disliked their decisions, and they're all the conservative ones. We're going to come back to that. Starlink says the government is increasingly interfering with astronomy. That dang private sector. How dare they do that? That's ultimately what I think it comes down to. Don't you think it's a way for them to try to ding a private entity? I think so. EasyJet flight mayhem. A bag of vapes. I thought this said vipers at first, and I was like, ooh, snakes on a plane. No, it's boring. A bag of vapes exploded on a London-bound flight. An evacuating passenger injured themselves on the evacuation slide. I mean, it's a slide. How you go down it. I didn't even know how that happens, but, you know, it did. And passports now can be renewed online in the United States, according to the State Department. U.S. passports can now be renewed online, adult ones. They're rolling out a system bypassing the traditional method that requires printing out a form and mailing a check. Coming up, Our friend Carol Roth joins us on what the federal government did yesterday, the basis points, interest rates. What does it mean? Stick with us. Our partners over at ReadyWise. Speaking of chain of custody for stuff, you know where your food is coming from when it where it concerns ReadyWise. And I always think it's really important for things like survival food, right? I mean, heaven forbid something goes sideways, whether it's a natural disaster or otherwise. Maybe you have a power outage, whatever it is. Having emergency food that your family can rely on is incredibly important, and it gives you confidence and you get security knowing you've got essentials on hand to keep your family fed. And you don't have to worry about where your meals come from. You don't have to fight at the stores where the shelves are stripped or any of that stuff. With ReadyWise, they have all kinds of deals right now, and they have premium survival food made with 100% U.S. ingredients, and it's packed in a U.S. plant and shipped out from a U.S. plant. So you know the chain of custody for all your stuff. Freeze-dried, dehydrated, easy to prepare, just add water with a 25-year shelf life. They have a buy one, get one 72-hour food kit that includes two boxes, 12 pouches of premium survival food, over 11,000 total calories in each kit. And they also have fast and free shipping. And promo code Dana20 at checkout gets you 20% off of any regularly priced item. So visit ReadyWise.com and use promo code Dana20 at checkout for 20% off any regularly priced item. That's ReadyWise.com, promo code Dana20.
Brighten up your timely news consumption with a Dana Show podcast, where every update comes with a little dash of not so serious on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're committed to maintaining our economy's strength by supporting maximum employment and returning inflation to our 2% goal. Today, the Federal Open Market Committee decided to reduce the degree of policy restraint by lowering our policy interest rate by a half percentage point.
So this is Jerome Powell, chair of the Fed. We were talking about this yesterday when it came out that there was only one on the board that voted for the 25.25 cut, a more modest cut, and everyone else wanted the half point. And Kanan made the observation that this isn't going to do anything because you're with what the federal government's Harris Biden is proposing, and what the Fed is doing here. This is not going to do anything. We're going to stay in the same exact spot that we've been in this whole time. We're going to dive into this. Welcome back. Dana Lash with you. Joining me now, she is one of the funnest, coolest people in all of economics, investment, everything. It's Carol Roth, who has got the best hair ever. And she's Gen X cool. She's an OG. She's very cool. Carol Roth, she describes herself as a recovering investment banker. But you can make sure you get her newsletter over at carolroth.com/news, because that's where you can go and get almost as educated as she is on all this stuff. She breaks it down for you regularly. And her latest book, You Will Own Nothing, Your War with a New Financial World Order and How to Fight Back, should win the scariest book of the decade. Carol joins us now via Skype. It is terrifying, and I learned a lot of things that I didn't even know before, and I wish I didn't know now. But Carol, I wanted to get your reaction to this, because everyone says that this is just a giant, big gift to Kamala Harris and Democrats right before the election. Is it? Do you believe that?
Well, Dana, Jerome Powell is unburdened by what has been.
Oh, no.
And that is a rate hike cycle. We are now in a rate cutting environment. And I think there are a few things and a few different ways you can look at it. Certainly the optics of it right before an election are not what you'd want to be looking at. If you have all different potential meetings to cut at, waiting till the one right before the election and then doing a 50 basis point cut isn't necessarily the greatest optics, because then you have Kamala Harris and all of the people who are spreading propaganda for her saying on one hand, oh, well, look, inflation is clearly under control, because otherwise the Fed wouldn't have felt comfortable in cutting 50 basis points. So there is that optic. There is the other optic, which is, wow, he's saying the economy is so great, but he's cutting 50 basis points. Maybe it's not as good. Maybe he is concerned about what she has been touting in terms of the labor market and the strength of the economy. So really the narrative could work either way. And I'm sure if you are on Kamala's side, you're going to interpret it one way. If you're on Trump's side, you're probably going to interpret it the other way. And my guess is that they have seen some of the data, probably more than we have seen, and are worried about what's coming down the pike in terms of the economy, particularly in terms of the white collar jobs. We have seen more and more layoffs for the people who have been propping up the economy, the asset holders, the people who are wealthy, who have the high paying jobs. Even a company like Amazon, you know, now is mandating 5 days back in the office. Companies didn't have that kind of leverage before. Buried in that release, they said we're looking to maybe get rid of some managers. So I think that all plays more into the narrative that they are concerned about being behind the curve and that the economy and particularly the jobs situation could get away with them. So yes, it does seem political, but it could cut either way.
Yeah, it's such a shell game. It really is, because, you know, as the jobs numbers being revised, and then I think it was what, like a million that were just sort of like made up from nothing. And when normally when you would see a rate cut like this, you would think, oh, everything must be going really well for them to do this. You know, jobs, I guess, are being created. You know, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, this is our job. We follow this stuff. And so we know the truth of it because this is what we do day in and day out. But people who are like, you know, working, you know, anywhere from 8 to 12 hours a day to make ends meet, they can't follow all of the ins and outs and the sleight of hand that they see Washington do. So they see stuff like this and they might think, well, maybe this is a good sign. Maybe the economy isn't doing as bad. And that's what you would think, except that's not really what this is signaling. And they're saying, too, that more cuts could be coming this year, which makes it even more confusing. I mean, is that something that we can bank on? That's where I'm like, wait, well, then why just go big or go home? What are you doing?
So all of this is very contextual. When you think about cutting 50 basis points out, you know, from doing absolutely nothing, historically, when that has happened is usually when there has been some sort of a crisis, right? Yeah. We saw this, you know, during COVID. We saw this during the Great Recession financial crisis. So it's not actually typically a great signal. That being said, they have raised very, very far, very fast. And I've been somebody who said that I think that they went too high. I think that they were behind the curve in terms of cutting. So I do think it makes sense for them to cut. The question is, like you said, when do they stop? Because the expectation is that we'll probably see another 225 basis point cuts in November and December. So that will bring it to a percentage point this year, and then maybe another 1% next year. The challenge is there's something called the neutral rate. And this is sort of theoretical. This is the line in the sand between where Fed policy goes from being restrictive to accommodative. And they want Fed policy theoretically to have no impact, the market to just, you know, do what it's supposed to be doing. And that is this theoretical neutral rate. So right now, I think we are above that rate, which is why cutting the rates, you know, doesn't become massively inflationary or anything like that. The challenge is they don't know what that's going to be. And so they keep cutting away. And at some point, they may cut too far. And that's when you see the tick up of inflation and you see it becoming more accommodative and creating all of the backlash in the other direction. So I don't think we're there yet. I think that this is warranted, although potentially could be a signal that we should be paying attention to. But it really is all about what's coming down the line. And by the way, Dana, all of us focused on the Fed, which when I started in investment banking, we never did this. This is a newer thing that's come out kind of post Great Recession financial crisis that we hang on the Fed's every word. It really obfuscates the important issue, which is the massive debt load that we have and the massive deficits that the governments are running. The debt to GDP, the deficits to GDP, yes, the rate cut will hopefully help in terms of financing that and make it cheaper to finance, which helps a little bit, but it doesn't solve the bigger issue. And that is what is underpinning all of this discussion.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you, like what this means for, because we keep hearing about the housing market and, you know, mortgages, and we've got, you know, the promise from Kamala Harris, got a shrinking housing market and we got to give everybody $25,000, you know, to buy houses. And then you have the stories about the automobile loans and how people are defaulting, and you have repossessions that are going through the roof, and it's 401k and people losing on their savings. For all of those folks, which is the majority of Americans, I think, that are in this crunch, how is this isn't really going to improve things for them?
Well, if they have floating rate debt, you know, as interest rates come down, they will probably see that like interest rate coming down in their debt. But the reality is it doesn't change the fact that they are out of runway, that they have very little savings, that they have historic levels of debt. And so, yes, maybe it gives them a little breathing room. It's one of the reasons why I don't think this particular Fed cut is going to be inflationary. I don't think that consumers en masse have this massive ability to take on more debt because the rates are now lower and they think that it's, you know, a quote unquote bargain, which it's still not. But we do, you have this consumer that is very much constrained and has been really propped up by government spending and by the people who are more well off. And that goes back to the point I made before, is that if we see the cracks around the white collar jobs that have really been propping up this idea that there's growth in the economy, then all bets are off, because we know that middle to lower end consumer is struggling and is going to continue to struggle because prices for them, cost of living, remain out of touch.
Talking with our good friend Carol Roth, I wanted to play for you. This is Audio Soundbite 32. It's one of your favorite people, Janet Yellen, who is talking about the extension of the Trump tax cuts, which we're told are very expensive to have tax cuts. And I know how you feel about that. You almost see smoke coming out of Carol's ears right now. I want to play this for you, and I wanted to get your reaction to this. This is Janet Yellen talking about tax cuts.
So if the entire tax cut is just extended and nothing is allowed to expire, I believe the Congressional Budget Office is estimated that over 10 years, that would be almost a $5 trillion blow to the overall budget deficit. And honestly, I really believe that's something the United States can't afford.
In all of the discussion that I hear from Yellen, even Powell, all of the sound bites that we collect and that we play, not a single one of these people, Carol, talk about the government spending and government spending, what it doesn't have and how that factors into this. So they're talking about how we can't continue these tax cuts, but what about the level of spending?
I mean, you cannot loathe these people enough. The discourse is so dishonest. And it's one thing if you're ignorant, it's an entirely different thing if you know better. And Janet Yellen should know better. So shame on you, Janet Yellen, once again, for saying another ridiculous thing. First of all, Dana, there's a reason why the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act have not been overturned during the Biden-Harris administration. And that is because the government continues to collect more and more money. They are on track to collect $5 trillion this year, which is more than the GDP, the entire output of every country in the entire world other than the United States and China. So they are collecting, in terms of taxes from us, more than the output of Germany or Japan, and it's still not enough for them. When you lower a tax rate, it doesn't mean you collect less taxes. They know that very well. So the idea that you keeping more of your money, use it productively, give even more back to the government, somehow is creating a deficit is ridiculous. The fact of the matter is that government spending is out of control and that they are running deficits at this point, which are double the historic average. And that is usually done in a time of stress, not in a time of quote unquote growth. They have been doing that to prop up the appearance of growth in the economy. And we are paying the price for that very, very literally, each and one, every one of us. So we need to continue growth and we need to shrink spending. And that is the only way we are going to save the fiscal situation in this country. Otherwise, it will go off that cliff eventually, and it will have implications not just for every one of us in this country, but globally. It will be a very ugly thing. And the idea to say that letting people keep more of their money while they are continuing to collect more dollars is going to create an issue. You know, they all deserve to be, well, I shouldn't say what they deserve to be because I'll get in trouble, but you can just insert your favorite thing from a cartoon.
I can imagine. I can imagine. Well said. Yeah. Our very good and very smart friend, Carol Roth. She's the smartest, loveliest person in finance and business in the economy. She needs to actually be directing economic policy. Really, I'm just saying for the Republicans that are watching. Always,
I thought you liked me, Dana.
Oh wait, I wouldn't want to do that to you. Oh no, we're so glad that you're on our side. Really, get her book. You Will Own Nothing. It's terrifying and one of the most educational reads. And make sure you sign up for her newsletter, carolroth.com/news. Carol, always a pleasure. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks, my friend.
Of course.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
A Florida man removed 20 Burmese pythons from the Everglades, winning a contest. This is actually a big deal down there. It happened because somebody ended up having a pet at some point. They let it go, and then the population just went crazy. This guy, Ronald Kiger, won $10,000 in the Florida Python Challenge after the annual 10-day hunt because they are an invasive species that can destabilize the entire ecosystem. And so they had they have this challenge that they do every year. And this guy ended up, he tipped the scales this year. He reached first place by one python. It's a 10-day hunt. They have 800 people from 33 states, and they compete for $25,000 in prize money. And they have novice, professional, military, different categories. And they had, in total, 195 Burmese pythons removed from the wild. And that's wild. They said that the female can lay like 50 to 100 eggs at a time. They have to humanely kill them, and then they have to turn their carcasses into 3 check-in stations. So, because they are invasive. I mean, they will just wreck a whole area. So, wow. This guy, this dad, I mean, would you do anything different? Imagine you find a peeping Tom looking into your daughter's bedroom window. That's what happened to this Flagler County father. A Florida dad took matters into his own hands when he found a peeping Tom peering into his daughter's bedroom window. The guy camped out. This guy, the dad, September 13th, he had a Louisville Slugger and a beer, and he camped out in his backyard waiting for the suspect, who he said had been terrorizing their neighborhood. He was a peeping Tom that's been going to multiple houses, and he said the daughter saw him. And then the dad said that he saw the guy at his daughter's window looking in. He goes, I said a couple choice words, and when he turned toward me, I swung the bat. He said he was a pretty big dude, so I was going for his head. And when I did, he started to run. They have security footage showing the dad chasing him down, yelling out to the neighbors to call the cops. And you can hear the dad yelling, where are you? There's a lot of expletives. But he goes, where are you going, boy? Come here. I've got something for you. The suspect was caught creeping around multiple neighbors' homes, spying on women. And one guy said that his wife saw the silhouette of a guy in her backyard in the pouring rain just staring at her, and it scared her half to death. And all these people have been seeing this. So they're getting him. This is wild. His name's Damian Smith. Golly, what a devilish name. He's charged with aggravated stalking, voyeurism, prowling, $86,000 bond. He had made a bomb threat at a Flagler high school in 2013. So the sheriff, Rick Staley, Flagler County, praised the dad for his hands-on approach. He goes, I want to kind of put a cape on and go find another bad guy. That's what the dad said. That's awesome. But the guy, apparently, he admitted to deputies that he gets a thrill from watching people, women particularly, in their homes. This guy sounds like a serial killer. This Damon Smith guy, he's 29 years old. He sounds like a serial killer, does he not? Golly, I swear I've seen this movie. It's crazy. And we're out of time. I've got a couple other ones. I'll share those with you tomorrow. Coming up, we got a lot of stuff to still get into. The guy who targeted the Supreme Court justices, only the conservative ones. We got that coming up as well. Stick with us, third hour on the way.
You know, sometimes I'm asked, well, where is the policy? Well, go to the website. That's where the policy is. You know, I had more policy than anybody had. I gave speeches about it. It was on our website. I wrote a book with Jim Kane about it. We have lots of policy. At the end of the day, that's not what caused people to vote for me or against me.
No, she kept saying that it was sexism. That's what did it. Good heavens. Welcome back to the program. Top of this third hour, Dana Lash with you. And this, going into this, the policy. What policy? She didn't really have a whole hell of a lot. And all she did was complain about everybody else. I don't really consider that something that you can take to the bank. Top of this third hour, Dana Loesch with you. You can find us, Channel 347 DirecTV on X. The chat is at Rumble. And we are also on Substack, Chapter and Verse. Policy. One of the policies, the only thing that they can focus on the left is, what is it, abortion and taxing everybody, and the earned path to citizenship, whatever that phrase means. I don't know if you've seen this. If you get the newsletter, if you're one of the subscribers that gets the newsletter, this was one of the things that is being discussed, this headline and these accusations that's being discussed. There was a story of this woman. Her name's Amber Thurman. And her story is being weaponized by Democrats as a way to argue, particularly in Georgia, because they've been arguing about the 6-week a ban on abortion for birth control in Georgia. And Democrats have been trying to make this like a key thing. They think that this is going to be a wedge that gets those independents and maybe some of the moderates back. The headline is Democrats blame abortion bans for Georgia woman's death. And this is a story. Lorraine's kind of written about this before because this is very similar to some other stories that they've tried to weaponize. So this woman, she discovered that she was expecting twins. And she sought abortion as a form of birth control. She was past the 6-week mark, the limitation, in her state of Georgia. So she drove to North Carolina. She took an abortion pill in North Carolina, and then she took another in Georgia. And women commonly wind up in the hospital because of this, because of the complications that these pills cause. As Thurman discovered, she began vomiting blood, and then she developed sepsis. You know why? She developed sepsis. And she waited, and I don't know why, she waited for days before going to the hospital. So by the time she got to the hospital, due to medical negligence, they waited to perform a DNC, which was needed because there was a medical emergency caused by taking the abortion pills. Now, the left, including Elizabeth Warren, who's repeated this ad nauseum, is claiming that Thurman could not obtain a DNC upon admitting herself to the hospital because state law outlawed them, which was a lie. If you get the newsletter, I actually linked the specific statute in Georgia law that explicitly allows for those, for DNCs as a treatment following a miscarriage. It's not to be used to take a life, but it's completely common for treatment for miscarriage. I can't even believe that someone would actually make that statement with a straight face, because that's not true in any state, and it's especially not true in Georgia. So the reason that this woman ended up losing her life was because she took these pills. And then she waited to go to the hospital. And then there's negligence on, for whatever reason, on the part of the staff, because the law is, that the law is, you know, it explicitly states that they can do that. And they're trying to say that, oh, no, we couldn't, because it was, at that point, she had already miscarried. That's why she was developing sepsis. This wasn't using a DNC to perform an abortion. It was to treat following a miscarriage. So these doctors are, any doctor that's saying otherwise, and they're always these super far left pro-abortionists, and they're all for abortion as birth control. They're the ones who are, they and the politicians pushing this narrative want you to, they want to convince stupid people who don't know human biology nor these processes or how the human body works. They think that those people will believe this stuff if they claim it. I mean, really, more and more, and one of the things that Lorraine had noted in some of the pieces that she had written about this is that they will gamble with women's lives to score political points. Like with this. I mean, there's a reason why these pills come with a lot of caution attached, because the complications can be severe. And she began developing these symptoms like almost immediately, according to the court documents. And so she waited for days before going in. She didn't die because she was denied an abortion. She died because she took an abortion pill. She legally acquired abortion pills. None of this, she didn't do anything illegally. She legally went and got abortion pills. and she began, her body began rejecting her twins. Then she developed sepsis. She's vomiting blood. She waited for days before she went to the hospital. So none of this was because she was denied an abortion. It sounded like she was reckless and irresponsible in terms of taking abortion pills and then not getting medical care immediately. And then for whatever part, medical negligence apparently played. But to falsely, to try to weaponize this, because there's three lives involved, not just one, to try to say that, oh, well, this is because abortion, that's not even, that's the dumbest and most maliciously incorrect thing. That's a lie. It is a malicious, hateful lie. And it ignores that three lives were lost so that people could make a point on abortion. It's sad. But the left, I mean, it's like they know no bounds, honestly. If you want to, if you want to say, well, if you want to go after the hospital for negligence or whatever, for that reason, then that's a completely legitimate thing to make, because at that point she was having a miscarriage. She had had a miscarriage. Her body was poisoning itself. She was in sepsis. She didn't go into sepsis for no good reason. There's a reason she went into sepsis. So that's, and the law explicitly allows, and again, I'll pull it up even. It's the Title 16, and it gets into subsection 16 to 11. And this was actually codified in 23, where they, I mean, there's nothing that's, there's no gray areas here. And it gets into exactly what is allowed. And the DNC as a treatment following a miscarriage is completely protected, which is exactly what was happening here. So don't let them lie to you about this stuff to weaponize it. It's so lame. This is, you know, they, the left needs to think of their language, because it's getting, it's going to get people killed. And here, within the same week that we had the news of a second attempt on the former president's life, now we have the news of, with the Supreme Court. This is insane as well. This guy from Alaska has been charged with threatening to kill six Supreme Court justices. He was arrested yesterday for allegedly threatening to kill six members of them. This 76-year-old, he sent over 465 messages to the Supreme Court through an online portal. And they, I mean, it was pretty bad stuff. He threatened to kill them, torture them, kidnap them, hang them, behead them, execute them, all kinds of stuff. It was encouraging other people to join in. He faces 9 counts of making threats against a federal judge, 13 counts of making threats in interstate commerce, and he pled not guilty. And the reason that he did it, he says, is because he was disagreeing with their decisions. And interestingly, it was literally all the conservative justices. Conservative justices. Imagine that. Huh. That's kind of wild, is it not? All that, they just happen to be one political ideology.
Yeah, but the right is a threat to democracy. Mm-hmm. They're a danger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
He was saying that he wanted to hang one justice from an oak tree, and that... Yeah. And said that he would gladly provide the rope. And he was referring to the former president as a, quote, convicted criminal. And he was also using racial slurs towards one justice. I wonder who that justice was. And saying that he was protecting the convicted criminal. I wonder what justice that was. Conservative. Yeah. So, of course, this guy is like a... This is just lefty through and through. He had over 80 donations going back to 2016 through Act Blue, according to an investigation, and Red State has a link to that. So just saying, at some point, there is no both sides of this. It's all coming from one side, and it's all directed to one side. This is how it's been. I mean, I've never seen both sides. When people try to both sides, I've never seen it coming from the right. I have not seen it coming from the right. Kane, correct me if I'm wrong. I've not seen it.
I haven't seen it either.
Whether it was Occupy Wall Street, going back to the Weathermen in the 60s, Occupy Wall Street, BLM, this stuff, Transtifa, Antifa, all of it. I've never seen it. It's all been the violence, that everything has been from one side.
I've seen when the media immediately comes out after these events and say that it's somebody from the right, or that's somebody that supports Trump, or somebody that whatever. But then later, when the actual truth comes out, see, this is the thing. The lie travels around the world twice before the truth gets its pants on. And that's how they always get away with it.
Yeah. I mean, the Nashville killer in that school, Transtifa, from the left. I mean, when you look at the past killers, they're from the left. When you look at the first guy who in Butler County, Pennsylvania, who shot Trump in the head. That guy, lefty, according to the online activity, etc. This guy, lefty. The Alaskan guy with the Supreme Court justices, lefty. The guy who was going to kill Brett Kavanaugh the last go around after Chuck Schumer was out in front of the Supreme Court saying Brett Kavanaugh and yelling and talking about how the justices were going to pay. That guy was a lefty. I mean, at what point are we, as the left, going to go, maybe we should, I don't know, stop inspiring our nut jobs to go and try to murder people on the right? How often is this? I mean, good heavens. And then they act as though they project and say that this is, oh, well, the, you know, Trump's remarks here, Trump's remarks there. I'm just so tired of it. I am so tired of it. And that's all we've been hearing. In California, Newsom is basically, well, he's banning parody. We mentioned this a little bit yesterday. He signed this ban against political deepfakes. The issue is that it was this bill pertaining to AI, and he was pretending that he was signing it for the protection of Hollywood actors and voiceover artists and things like that, which I do think for that industry, there are, you could say, well, negotiate in your contract. And that's true. But you have to realize a lot of these people, they'll sign 4 to 6 year contracts in the entertainment industry. And in that time frame, you know, you have all of these, all of the software, et cetera, with AI that develops and is released and is put into use before they're able to renegotiate their contract. So in those instances, I do understand having to, the requirement to have the state legislature act on something. I do understand that because it's new tech. And if your contract isn't up for negotiation, it's not something that you can foresee because nobody knows when the timeline of what software is going to be released, etc. He's trying to use that as like a Mott Bailey. Like, oh, well, this is good. This is really what I'm doing. But really, he's like, we've got to ban deepfakes and we've got to ban. But he's not talking about deepfakes. He's talking about parody. He was using as an example when he was tweeting it, parody videos of that clearly are fake of Kamala Harris being goofy or whatever. And then it's being shared politically and he gets mad at it and acts like he's got to go in and save the day, et cetera, et cetera. But you can't just, I mean, AI, the power of it is an issue, but using that as a front to do what you really want to do, which is to ban one of the most stinging forms and most effective forms of dissent, which is parody and ridicule. That's not the way to do it. Not the way to do it. We got more in store. We've got headlines coming up. And then while we're dealing with all of our open borders and everything here in the United States, some of these European nations are actually doing a 180. So what does that mean for the EU? And is that, I mean, are we going to have some of that here? Like, what's up? We're going to talk with the guy, Matt Maurer with the EU-US Forum about that.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So there's panic over new ChatGPT that reasons, as experts are warning of terror AI raids that can steal cash from huge numbers of victims. So AI that thinks, I'm telling you, this is, and they're taking up jobs. AI's taking people's jobs. It's a scary thing. Let's see. I don't follow this Mr. Beast guy. Do you follow him? I've heard some pretty bad stuff.
Yeah, I watch his videos actually all the time.
I've heard some really bad stuff though.
Yeah, I have too.
Like really bad stuff.
And some of that's already pretty much all played out, but I think this is all residual stuff here.
Yeah, he's facing a class action lawsuit over alleged mistreatment of contestants on his reality television show. And because he's had a guy who, wasn't one of his guys like a considered a groomer or something like that?
Well, he was trans.
Yeah, but also
and then
like
there
a,
was some behavior there that was questionable.
Yeah, grooming behavior, yeah. So a class action lawsuit was apparently filed against him. Consequence, your website is garbage. By the way, you need to stop all your crappy pop-up ads because you're not even a good enough website to arrest people's browsers with these type of pop-up ads. And the class action lawsuit filed against Amazon and YouTube, Mr. Beast alleging severe mistreatment. Let's see, la 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 la. I mean, I just think that with all the guy's baggage, why would anybody want to have anything to do with him at this point? Why? I mean, you just, why? I don't know. Why? It's just this dumb. Also, let's see here. Everything's frozen because the Consequence website is so bad. It froze everything. Horrible website. Just garbage. This San Francisco cops are using a stunt to capture lawbreakers, an inflatable chicken costume in San Francisco. I think you probably, it'd be too dangerous to do it in Ohio, Springfield, Ohio, I think. But yeah, they're using it to navigate crosswalks. Stick with us.
The Dana Show Podcast, your fast, funny, and informative news companion for those always on the move. Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, J.D. Vance is apparently going to be speaking about immigration in, well, I think he was talking about, he's going to go to Wisconsin. And then there's discussion of whether or not he would go to Springfield, Ohio to talk about it. And it's not just here in the United States that we're having to worry about issues, whether it's at the southern border, whether it's that temporary protected status program through which, you know, you have the Harris-Biden administration bringing in people without documentation, without any kind of vetting, and dropping them in these Midwestern towns. This is an issue, and we've talked about this, that we've been seeing play out in the EU and EU nations. And I've been stunned at some of what I've seen. So I just saw, this headline was 3 days ago. Starmer, who is the new prime minister over in Britain, is looking to Italy on how to stop migrant boats or boats of illegal immigrants. Germany, we had this story, we talked about this last week, notified the European Union that they're going to bring in controls on all land borders. And this apparently infuriated the European Union, and they were worried about their free movement principle. What is happening? And there are more nations to come. And so for this, for some insight on this, I wanted to bring in our friend Matt Mowers. He is a founding board member of the EU-US Forum, and he worked with the Trump administration as well. He joins us now via Skype. Matt, it's good to see you. Thank you so much for joining us. What is happening here? I mean, Keir Starmer, he's very, very far left. Very, very open borders. I mean, from everything that he said that I've read, like his, you know, transcripts of his remarks and things like that. Now they're looking to Italy, for Europe, very conservative Italy for how to deal with this. What's happening?
Well, it just goes to show you that these folks have been so asleep or have been so wrong for so long, they had to do something. And they're living the impact of it every single day right now. I mean, you had folks in the European Union and in the UK for a generation now saying we have to have open borders. We have to have everyone welcome. It's the same type of language that you heard from the left here in the United States. And yet what they weren't thinking about was the fact that if you do that, if you implement those policies, not only are you going to have economic repercussions, but you're going to have safety issues. And we see that. I mean, you brought up Germany right now. 40% or so crimes committed in Germany, violent crimes, mm-hmm. are being committed by someone who's not German, someone who migrated there legally or illegally, one or the other. And so what you are seeing right now is the real life repercussions of that. And so even the left wing is recognizing that they have a problem on their hands. And even if they don't believe that they need to change the policy, they recognize they have a political problem on their hands.
Right.
And that's what I think the biggest issue is. I mean, we did a poll in June or so, just before the EU elections, and we showed that over 70% of residents, voters, in a lot of the key countries that we were polling wanted stronger immigration controls. 70%. And you can't get anyone to agree on that, something like that much in the United States. And yet in Europe, it's been so bad and so problematic that they actually come around to it. And so if there's one lesson from those EU elections, or it's one lesson that even is coming from the UK elections, because the quote unquote right. conservatives in the UK were not really doing much on this issue, is that, you know, they need to actually take new actions. And that's why you're seeing Starmer take the position he is. And it's the reason you're beginning to see even some folks in the European Union wake up and recognize they have to change and do
right.
something.
And for Starmer with the UK, I mean, this was a guy who was against Brexit. And one of the reasons why they wanted to leave the EU is they wanted to have, one of the many reasons they wanted to have greater control over their borders. Germany, part of the EU, they tell the country's interior minister, informs the European Union that they would like to bring in more restrictive controls. And the way that I understand that, Matt, is part of the EU, and I know that they're a part of the agreement with these, I think out of the 27 member nations, there's only two, like Ireland, I think, and Cyprus that don't go along with, I think, the Schengen agreement. But they're informing the European Union that we have an emergency. We're invoking the emergency clause here. And the headline, and I have, this is a different headline. These are all British and German publications. It was described as fury, Europe's fury, as Germany tightens its borders. Now, the addendum to this is that all of the neighboring countries, who are also all EU nations, are saying, we're not going to take these people in if Germany rejects them. How So what does this do to the agreement that they had, the free movement agreement, the Schengen agreement? What does this do to the EU's ability, their influence and strength, if one country after another is going to start saying, no, we're invoking this emergency clause?
Yeah, no, it's the biggest political problem for Brussels that they've probably seen since Brexit.
Wow.
Is the fact that you now have these countries that are saying, we can't take it anymore. I mean, Germany, for example, you just talked about, I just mentioned the statistic that 40% of crime is committed by migrants. You know, they're living the challenges of this. And here's what's so frustrating to so many countries. You know, it's a lot like the United States. A lot of folks are coming in from Eastern Europe. They're coming to Southern Europe. It's why you've seen Italy respond the way they have. It's why you've seen Hungary respond the way they have. Like Poland's responded the way they have. Germany now responding. And it's because they're saying we are on the front lines of this. I mean, it's a lot like if you go back a few years ago, what happened in Texas and Florida when you had Governor Abbott and you had Governor DeSantis saying, this is not just a Texas and Florida challenge anymore. This is a national problem. We cannot come up with the housing, the education costs, the healthcare costs, handle the community safety, the law enforcement necessary to have policing if we have this massive influx and handle it ourselves. Germany's doing the exact same thing, crying out for help right now. And what you've seen is because of the results of the EU elections, you saw conservative parties gain seats. You saw a collapse of support for the Green parties and a lot of the left-wing parties in June. And so these are political leaders finally responding, saying, our people are crying out for help. We've got to now cry to Brussels. The problem is Brussels is ignoring them. They kind of continue to turn up their nose and say, you know, well, we'll just overpower your decision making. We're going to actually determine what makes the most sense for all of us. And not only that, but you saw Brussels after the EU elections refuse to hold themselves accountable. So despite this ascendant conservative number of members going to the EU Parliament, you actually had the same exact governing coalition that you did before. They didn't learn a single damn lesson. They kept doing the exact same thing. And it's voters are left saying, well, you know, what option do we have right now? And that's why you see some of the outcry in places like Germany and certainly Hungary.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we're talking with Matt Mowers, who's a founding board member of the EU-US Forum, who's been watching this growth, this explosion of conservatism in all of these, you know, nations that are considered our allies. And I always consider, you know, national security health to also be measured by the health of your allies. You mentioned Hungary. So Hungary was going to send buses of illegal immigrants to Belgium's capital, the Belgian capital. And now, and I was looking at this guy's name, the Belgian prime minister. And, you know, I know what I know about, you know, the political affiliation of a number of European politicians. This guy, though, I immediately remembered why I knew him. He was the mayor when there was the conservative conference in Belgium. Yep. He was the mayor in Brussels who was threatening to shut down free speech and to shut down a conservative conference because it was conservative. And they sent, I mean, police out. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. So now he says, no, if Hungary sends buses of illegal immigrants in, we're going to turn them right back around. We're going to block them. But I thought this guy was like the open borders. If you don't agree with me, I'm going to shut everything down guy. What happened?
No, that's exactly right. It's the exact same guy. I think the last time I was on your show probably even was we were talking about that exact moment when you had this the mayor of Brussels, Philippe Close, go and start trying to shut down any sort of free speech because he said, well, it could be dangerous rhetoric. You know, he was going to be the police speech. Fortunately, I think by the time we even talked, the national Supreme Court stepped in and said, well, wait a second. Like, they're actually one of the few.
It was the day after. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And they're one of the few countries that actually has protection of free speech. Many European countries really don't. But they're actually one of the few that does. And the court said, you can't do that. And so they let the conference move on. But yes, same exact dopey mayor. And now the guys out there saying that if Hungary, you know, Hungary is seeing a surge of both people claiming asylum, folks are trying to cross the border illegally, a whole host of different folks. And they're saying the exact same thing that Texas and Florida did, which is just because we're on the border, if we're going to claim this is a continental EU problem, it's got to be a total continental EU solution.
Right.
So we can't absorb every person who wants to just come across the border. You wanted to have this open arm policy. You want to say everyone is accepted. Doesn't matter, you know, who you are, what your background is, or, you know, what affiliation you may have with some sort of crime network or the rest of it. You want to do any vetting? Then fine. We will send them to Brussels. And you've got this mayor now saying he won't have it. It's just the same exact hypocrisy we saw when you had a bunch of these, you know, liberals in Martha's Vineyard saying, "Well, wait a second, we had that position when it affected, you know, the borders on the border communities, when it was, you know, someone dying in on a ranch in Texas every single day. But when it's in our, you know, $10 million vineyard, it's going to be a bit of a, you know, we have a bigger issue with it." Same exact type of elitism that we're seeing right now out of the mayor of Brussels. And you know, voters are just fed up with this. I mean, they're fed up in Europe with it. They're fed up in the United States with it. And they recognize that we need to have stronger border controls to ensure the security that we should all expect in our nations.
Yeah. And talking with Matt Maurer with this too, I look at it like as another crack in this, like very impractical, super ridiculously kittens and sunshine idealistic goal that the EU had with the free movement. And let's just have unchecked, unfettered access for everybody all throughout all of these nations. Well, now they're seeing the consequence of that. What is their hesitancy at maybe restoring some of these, you know, border protections without having to invoke emergency clauses? I mean, these sovereign nations have the right to do that. Are they just trying to be as influential as the United States and blocking everybody together? I'm just trying to figure out, you know, the machination of this.
Well, part of it's elitism. I mean, so that mayor Close actually went out and said, "Well, Hungary is a small nation. We will be able to squash them with the power of Brussels." I mean, like, he literally says the quiet part out loud.
Yeah.
Right? Like
not too bright, that one.
Is supposed to be, you know, something that they snicker about in closed doors and smoke-filled rooms. They're now saying it out in the open. And that's the problem right now. So you've got certain countries that are saying, "We are on the front lines. We are on the border. We are trying to actually handle these issues. We need your help," because all the agreements you just spoke about, and you're seeing ignorance coming from Brussels. And both Brussels, obviously the mayor of Brussels, but also the leadership of the EU Parliament in Brussels, who continue to ignore this issue, who, despite the elections in June, aren't willing to show any sort of connectivity to the people by changing the political leadership. And they continue to ignore this issue, or they, you know, put out a few vaguely worded talking points that don't actually make any significant policy changes. I mean, I actually had a meeting with someone from one of our allied countries who worked in the foreign ministry, and it was right before the EU elections. And I said to him, "What's going to change when conservatives win on immigration?" And I said, and he acknowledged that they'd gotten it wrong. To his credit, this guy actually said, "We got it wrong. We thought we had to tell everyone they could be open and welcome and the rest of it. It was the good thing to do. We didn't recognize the problems of it." So I said, "What are you going to do?" He says, "We don't know." Like, it was honest. They had not even thought about what they were going to change on it. Now, others do believe there will at some point be enforcement of borders, but it's going, because of the way the EU is constituted, the European Commission and everything else, it's going to come down to those individual leaders of individual countries to truly make that type of change. You're not seeing it out of the European Union Parliament right now.
Last question for you. Will they have to leave the EU to make that happen?
I don't think they have to. So as long as that the countries are affected, and make sure, you know, the leadership in Germany and Poland and Hungary and Italy get together and actually force the European Union to make the changes. A lot of change can happen on a policy level in the European Union when the individual leadership of those countries who make up the leadership in the EU can actually get together and make policy change. You can go through the EU Parliament. That's important.
Right.
But it's a cumbersome process. It's a large body. It doesn't always want to do anything to change, as we saw in June. But the individual leaders of the countries who are going to be responsive to the individual citizens of their countries can get together and make a change if they're willing to stand up and do it.
This is fascinating to watch, because it seems as though they're going the way that the United States needs to go in terms of securing the border. And we have a party here that doesn't, the government in charge, it doesn't want to do that. Doesn't, whether it's the northern border, the southern border, or all the other ports of entry through these programs. Matt Maurer with the EU-US Forum. You can find them also on X and stay up to date. As always, good to see you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Of course.
Subscribe to the Dana Show podcast, because who says you can't make fun of people while staying informed on your own personal time? Subscribe on YouTube, Apple, or wherever you get your podcast.
What's your most important issue?
The economy, getting the interest rates down, getting it to where we can afford to live in America. Right now, it's too expensive.
Okay, now let me maybe ask like a slightly impolite question.
Oh boy.
But, you know, if you can afford a boat, you're not hurting so bad, right? Because a boat costs a lot of money and it's a lot of upkeep.
Listen, nobody gave me.
Wow. Then we had a drop. I mean, if I was going to Zoomer talk this, how would I do it? Batty boss with a beer and no shirt. Batty boss with a beer and no shirt. Like that guy, right? It doesn't get any more boss than that. He's out there with a red Solo cup, a beer, his brewski, and he's got his boat. And she's like, well, you know, you got a boat. I mean, they act like it's a yacht. He's got a nice boat. Come on.
They try to demonize the flotilla that's in support of Trump, and this is the best media effort.
This is why I would actually want, I don't live by the sea, and I'm a little scared of the gator thing, but I kind of want to be able to do, I love the idea of doing a boat parade. I've only done canoes and like little John boats. Pretty sure I could drive this, like a boat like this. And by that, I mean, I probably couldn't and you should be terrified, but I'd like to try. So I'm just saying, because that would be fun, right? All right, I'm eating up Kane's time. Today in stupidity.
All right, Juan, this is Biden. This is more of a lie than stupid, but let's hear it.
By the way, I've never once spoken to the chairman of the Fed.
Okay, so he's making a point that the Fed should be independent. But it's like, no, but here's him talking to Powell.
Oh.
So clearly he's lying.
He doesn't remember.
He's never talked to Powell before, apparently.
He was told that guy was...
But yeah, and the Fed.
He was told that guy was his new vice president, I bet. Who knows? Folks, that does it for us today. Find us over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. Have a great night. Back with you Friday tomorrow.